You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Watching Westworld, the officially unofficial podcast for Westworld on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 4, Episode 8, Que Sera Sera. That's my mantra coming into this episode, Aaron. Que Sera Sera. Whatever will be with this show will be, because I don't know if you're aware of this yet, but we're all the way through Season 4 and there still is no renewal from HBO for Season 5.
Yep.
How can that be?
I think that there is a good chance the show will not be renewed.
Oh, God.
I think that it probably would have been renewed with maybe a smaller budget and episode commitment. But like, you know, with the takeover by Discovery guy, we alluded to that on the Instant Take podcast. And they're, you know, wanting to cut costs and pivot in different directions. This low rated, and I know a lot of people have like, oh, look, a million people are watching it. If you count piracy, it's this and that. But like, I mean, just look at the actual stats, you know, look at the season one, look at season two, look at season three. The audience has fallen off by half. Well, not between season one and two, but from between season two, season three, season four, the audience has shrunk quite a bit. And I guess that's one of the things, like, as I was watching this, I watched this a couple more times, and, you know, I've always admired the show's structure. I've always admired the show's themes, and I think I was wondering, and I saw a lot of people, other people online wondering, too. I wonder if the showrunners themselves kind of felt a little bit of that heat, and it's like, you know what, let's in this series in a way that it could serve as a fully recursive simulation that, like, essentially Dolores is going to, you know, reboot everything and run a test, what she's done before and she can't remember, and we're stuck on this loop permanently. There's something kind of interesting about that.
Sure. And that's very appropriate to the themes of this series.
100%, you know, I'm a little bit bummed because I've been waiting the whole time. It's like, well, what's your prescription? You know, you've accurately described a lot of problems with the world, a lot of problems with bringing AI, a lot of problems with automation and the way we've structured society for humans. What do you think we should do about it? Or what do you think looks like a happy ending? And they get to dodge that. But it's also open ended enough that they could, you know, come back and do a season five where it is a test that they run and it resolves and it says something profound about humanity and all that. It's just, man, I keep thinking about what this show looks like if they had ended last episode. You know, like, that was such, everyone was so fucking hyped.
Well, you mean what this season looks like or what the show looks like? Because I think ending last episode would have been super dissatisfying if it's the series finale.
Oh, that's
a
true
series finale, but you're not a season wrong finale. I think, yeah, last episode would have probably been a lot better, you know, and you'd have to finagle it a little bit with the Christina stuff because there was no resolution there.
But I
was not super satisfied with the way the season ended. I'm still not after the second or third watch here. I don't know. I mean, maybe it was a bit of hedging their bets the way they ended this season.
It just felt a little,
if we don't get a season five, this will stand as the series finale.
And I'm not the old person says that, oh, I've seen this finale and now this whole season is garbage. I still think this season is the second best season Westworld's ever had. It's just a different pattern where other seasons, you know, kind of were disappointing in the early goings because it felt like something wasn't, or it's, everything's confusing, or, and you know, that it's convoluted for the sake of convolution. And then by the time you get to the finale, you're like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. This felt the opposite, where it's like everything just kept getting cooler and cooler and cooler. And then the finale just got super coy. And the I just keep coming back to how bad the dialogue was and how poorly it was delivered. And I know, like, I talked about this in the instant take, you know, it's like there's a point where obviously you want to refer, you know, you get catchphrases and you get people coming back. And you saw that in Game of Thrones, which may be a bad comparison because it also ended well. But like, you know, the North remembers. The North remembered many different things over the course of the season. And there's a many different ways that characters could bring that thing back and make it badass or make it ironic or make it a bitter reflection. This is just like, you know, when William says kind of flippantly, well, if you can't tell the difference between fake and real, what's and the I don't know, Teddy just dead eyed and toning that the map is a map to human consciousness and all. it felt like bad fan fiction. That like they're including all the greatest hits, but not in any way that elevates or enlightens or that's what I'm struggling to say.
No, I definitely felt like the dialogue was super weak this episode. And some of it is the conceits that they have with the plot, right? Like Dolores is talking to herself in these scenes. And so when Teddy repeats something that we already know or that Dolores knows, and it comes off as like, oh, God, really? Because she's literally talking to herself. It's a little bit stilted there.
And they kept revealing that like every single time when she says, oh, it's just me talking to myself. And then I wake up and I see it's Teddy, but oh, it's me. And I'm like, holy. That felt a little
second reveal with Teddy is played like it's supposed to be a big shock, right? That Teddy is also not real. And I'm like, well,
man, yeah,
you already revealed that everyone around her is part of her own consciousness. Why would that be any different? I felt like you revealed this already, and then you reveal it and and the music swells and it's supposed to be a big surprise. There are a lot of problems with that.
Yeah,
for sure. And the dialogue did not help.
I also noticed that there seemed to be what I would call sloppy edits, or not even sloppy edits, just weird. Like, for example, like there's so many weird fade to blacks that interrupt the different beats that they're doing. And I wrote them down on my notes. We'll talk about them each one. And I started thinking when I was watching this the third time while I was finalizing my notes and I just had on the background, I was kind of looking at the scene and I'm like, well, shit. Maybe these are actually intentionally there because it means something fundamentally has changed or the point of view has changed. And I'm like, man, fuck this. If the way the things are revealed is bad art, then it's bad. Like I'll go another one. Like when Christina is finally, I think, realizing how she is. And I think the way they're going to envision her program Ghost in the Machine role is how everything around her is essentially badly lit with high definition. What would they call that? HDR.
HDR. HDR lighting. Blooming. Yeah.
And like Teddy is literally a cloud with a silver lining. Like that's just ugly. It looked bad.
Sure, I agree. I didn't like the look of it.
Like I'd rather they letterbox it. I wish they letterbox it from the side just so you know the difference between the simulation and the ghost and machine. But like the way they visualized her existence inside the walled garden, I just thought looked ugly and cheap. And that's bad. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't really like the look of that, but I suppose it was effective in getting its point across. And that's not something I say, you know, often in this show. I think the show looks amazing for the most part, but yeah, I agree. Not amazing. There's like 500 other things we could talk about before we get to the recap. I want to mention just like some general thoughts on each of the sort of aspects of this season, because I think there are a couple that worked. I think for me, the stuff with Hale really worked, and it worked as like a as a personal thing for her as a character, and also as a thematic thing for host and humans, you know, battling it out and trying to figure out, you know, what is the next step for our evolution. I think William's stuff worked with telling us like a host is no different than a human, like literally no different. The human can be the host can be the human. They're interchangeable, essentially.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be like a copy of them. Like if you inhabit someone's skin long enough, that wears on you like a butt groove on a couch. Yeah,
sure. Absolutely. You take the shape
nailed,
of that ass.
Nailed that metaphor.
But, you know, that creates, I think, some problems, especially if they leave it here and don't get a season five. The Sublime is a big fucking question mark, and they've never done enough with the Sublime to make me understand what is different about the hosts that go in there that's going to make a better world, if that's what they're trying to say, that I guess deserves to survive this extinction event. And if that's the case, like, I don't know what their thesis actually is, because the Sublime could be just as fucked up, right? Like when William says, hey, they're just as fucked up in there as we are out here, and Shaloris says, you have no way of knowing that. Well, I have no way of knowing that's not true either. So a 2-minute scene with Akichita being like the gatekeeper of this world did not give me any more insight into what that world looks like. How evolved are the people in there, both like, well, physically is a bad term because they're not physical, but how evolved are they, like, societally? Have they come to some equilibrium with their world? Like, we have not. So that's, they really did a shitty job with that, if this is the end of the series.
And why do they care so little about events happening in the outside world? That's the thing that I don't understand. It's kind of like, you know, when Boromir in the Fellowship of the Ring, like, meets Elrond, he's like, what? You guys are sitting here in your goddamn fall JCPenney collection. You're eating Limbus bread and you're drinking wine out of the brand. And we're like fighting for our lives with all these orcs and shit on the border every day. We're like, what the fuck, man? What the hell? Like, what is everyone doing in the Sublime? Are they supremely confident this is just going to work out? Or do they think that, like, well, we got 100 years. That's, you know, 100,000 years. That's a pretty good run. Like, what? Why don't they, like, not even one tries to come out in the real world and do anything to try to help what is,
I guess,
a genocide, an extinction.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, double extinction,
they, right? It doesn't seem like they can be good people unless they have run the simulations and they know everything that's works out, and they all buy into the humans and host equivalency, and none of this, and none of the billions of people that are never going to be remembered and brought back. Those people don't matter. I don't know how I feel about that moral calculus, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. If the board needs to be wiped clean so that they can start over in the Sublime, maybe that's a sacrifice they're willing to make because they've seen all the other, you know, possibilities, and it's the only way it works out, right? It's Akichita is like the second level of the Bernard plan. Bernard's plan that he's come up with in the Sublime is just all part of Akichita's plan. We don't know. That's the problem. If it stops here, we don't fucking know. And it's just a loose end that is actually essential to the story. It's maybe the most essential thing you could have. So they probably need to get a season five to sort that shit out.
And there's always this underneath everything, the idea that, like, are we still on Ford's plan, which is really...
I've never Arnold's plan. Cared about that. Like, I don't know what it means at this point. Like, unless he's, I certainly don't.
No,
think he's
I think it
as
means a lot
as the host in the Sublime. I don't think he could do the calculations the way they could.
Why couldn't he? He could project himself into the Sublime and do as much research as he wanted to. Right. I'm just saying. Like, why does it matter?
So, but
This is the story of the host achieving consciousness and making choices for themselves and freeing themselves, then the fact that this is some old dusty dude's plan is super patronizing. Like, it's...
God, that is the last thing I want them to do in the season, in the final season. Like, I do not want them to go back and retread that ground. Like,
all those decisions
you were making for yourself, Maeve and Dolores, those were all part of Ford's plan. And now you have to relitigate this whole damn thing about free will.
I mean, it's not about
made their statement about it and it's done. And if Ford comes back and says, haha, it's part of my master plan, that's going to be real boring for me.
Yeah, I don't know. Because it seems pretty clear that without Ford or Arnold, that the host would have been screwed. And I don't know how I feel about that, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, early on, certainly. I think now, though, I don't want to go back to that. I really don't.
I just think that, when I look at the Ford's last narrative, Journey into the Night, and how it looks like this is exactly what we're getting, I can't help but wonder if it is. We're all on his original plan, and I think that cheapens the lives of the host just a little bit, but I could be wrong on that. So,
Is it going to disappoint you if they just never address that because that was never their intention? Or
no, I don't care if they don't.
And we'll just let it go and say, well, that wasn't part of Ford's plan.
Yeah, or if they just don't address it at all and people can speculate whether it was or wasn't, and, you know, that's fine. I don't know.
The other thing they really shit the bed on, like, in a big way that I feel is kind of vital to understanding the hosts that don't choose a quote-unquote better life, is this transcendent stuff. In no way did they explain what Hale meant by that.
And you kind of needed to. Like, what is the opposing ideology here? Yeah.
Yeah, we never get any information about what the new forms that they're going to go into are capable of, either physically or technologically, right? The arm thing, I think, is a problem, fundamentally. They never produce any tentacles or fly out into space, and so we're left, like, not knowing the ways in which they are transcendent, which leaves us completely in the dark about why the hosts are choosing the flesh over those forms. And that was a fundamental thing in this season that they were trying to get to, is humans and hosts are so much alike that they do not want to transcend what they are. Even when given such possibly better options, like, I would transcend, fuck it. That's the thing. Like, not all humans are the same, right? And we see that, just like all hosts aren't the same.
But you say you transcend, but you don't even know what the hell transcendence is. That's the thing. Is like, I think that if you wanted to show this dichotomy where, like, Hale's exasperated, no one's, you know, hardly anyone is taking her option, is like, I don't even understand the two options. It's like if I was an alien from Alpha Centauri and someone said, do you want a tuna melt or a pastrami melt? Fuck, I don't know. You could ask me if I want a Subway sandwich or a shit sandwich, and I'd still, because, like, I've never had either one. How do I know which one is better? And I felt like there could have been, you know, when they had the hope, I thought that that was going to introduce, like, factions within the hosts where we could get away from the main players, the Men in Black and the Charlottes and all that stuff, and see them discussing about, like, you know, what is, you know, oh, we want to transcend. Well, what do you think? Like, what is the religious movement? Like, just can I have a character with for 5 minutes and it's can I have a person? Can I see a cold open where there's a host excited about transcendence? And, like, there's a little montage of him hearing about Hale talking about it. And, like, but we don't even know what the fuck it is other than a marble being put into a bipedal iPod. Like, why did anyone choose transcendence?
No, that's the problem. We don't know the choices. And when I say, like, I would transcend, I mean that in terms of definitional
transhumanism. Yeah.
I mean, if there's something better than the human form, I would absolutely take it. But, like, I don't know if this is better than the human form. It's well, a especially because
when you got Man in Black saying, well, your problem is your forebears just wanted to be free. You wanted to transcend. Well, I know what freedom looks like. But I don't know what transcendence feels like. What's the experiences? Are the hosts that have transcended happier? Like, what are they doing? Like, I without knowing which is the better way to go, that dialogue doesn't mean anything.
Right. I also don't think they're mutually exclusive. You can transcend and also be free.
Get greater freedom.
Perhaps
unshackled from the flesh. Yeah, I think. I mean, it's a possibility, but, like, I wish that they articulate. I think that's, you're right. That's one of the bigger bed shitting moments of the season. The fact that they just had this idea of transcendence. Clearly, it's never going to happen again. You know, that's the other thing. It's not like I don't see a way for this to even be answered. It was just a kind of MacGuffin And yeah. since so much of the philosophy of the show from the host perspective this season rotated around that, I felt like they needed to do a better job of explaining like what it was.
Yeah, and I think that diminishes the Hale stuff, although I don't think it makes it bad. I think I enjoyed the Hale stuff maybe the most of anything. The other problems I have, that Dolores stuff is just way too drawn out for what turned out to be a thoroughly underwhelming reveal. I think the Caleb stuff is fine, but it feels like a dead end to me.
Because I thought the Caleb stuff worked, but to what end? I don't know
exactly
what the point of it was, other than to add some purely human drama to it, because otherwise there would be no actual flesh and blood people
left
in the show to care about.
That is the purpose of it. But boy, that just hits a brick fucking wall at the end. Okay, human extinction. Okay, host outside the Sublime, fully extinct now. All sentient life on Earth gone.
Yeah.
What was the Frankie and Caleb stuff for?
Yeah, there's some people that said that there is, at the end of the episode, Caleb's hand stops shaking after his daughter pulls away. And they're like, that means Caleb has finally achieved fidelity. But first of all, I don't know that that's what is happening, because he was able to randomly stop his hand from shaking several times in the episode.
Yeah.
And two, if it is true, to what end? Because it's clear that in the grand sweep of the show, it literally means nothing. Like Dolores, again, I thought this made me angry because of the implications. but Dolores at the end saying like, this is it. There is no more sentient life left on Earth. And when I saw it the second time, I'm like, okay, I see what they're saying. She's like, well, maybe there is a few people here and there, but it's inevitable that's going to drive, you know, the robo-hobo prediction of the end of humanization is inevitable at this point. There's just not enough people left. And anyone that did dodge the bullet is just going to die. And within 100 years, that kind of scope of thing. But again, so if Caleb did achieve, fidelity, what does it mean? How does it impact the story? Who knew about it? How does that information help Dolores in her grand test?
And season 5 is almost absolutely necessary to finish off this story, to actually truly tell this story, because of things like that. And I think things like that also make this season as a standalone very disappointing. Very like, ultimately, like, there was this huge buildup of like Westworld's back, baby. They're telling stories in interesting ways, and then none of those stories are brought to their final conclusion, and with the exception of a couple, that was. Doesn't make it bad necessarily, because it's very clear they are telling stories that are not contained by a single season. I mean, if you look at the show over the course of its run, it's doing something bigger, something more than just a season, but it makes a very dissatisfying experience as a watcher to get to the end of a season and go, well, you actually didn't do much of anything in this season.
I also think it's funny because there's a lot of takes. It's like, man, it's one of the fastest circle jerk, anti-jerk cycles I've ever seen. In less than 48 hours, I saw the Westworld sub just ascend in flames like it was the end of season 1 or season 2, and the hosts are rebelling and they're just tearing shit up and breaking things. And then the anti-jerk of like, you guys, I can't fucking believe that just 24 hours ago, you're saying season 4 is a return to form, it's the greatest, and now you're saying it's shit. Well, that can go to a fine 8-course French dinner and think it's amazing. And at the end, the chef comes out and kicks you in the nuts and you're going to give it a 1-star review because that sucked. That ending really changed how you felt about the rest of the experience. And I don't understand how humans can talk to each other on the internet and not understand how humans work. But,
well, I mean, shit, if this show's taught me anything, it's that humans don't understand humans at all.
That's true.
It's going to take hosts to understand us, man.
That's true. Yeah, and I'm not saying anyone's subjective opinion is wrong. I'm just saying it's hard for me to understand when like someone's articulating their subjective opinion, you're trying to trap them in logic. Well, you like the first 7 bites, but the 8th turned out to be literally a piece of shit. Were you lying about the other? No, come on. Be better. Let's try to be better in our conversation with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, And that's maybe what I would say to Westworld. Just be better. Be better.
Yeah, I think if season five is just a little bit better, I think we're gonna have something. I don't know, man. I feel all this stuff coming out about the HBO acquisition, and
there's almost no chance that season five is better, right? Like they might wrap up the storylines, but I don't think qualitatively it's going to take a giant leap.
I was trying to think of is there there's always a bigger fish possibility that Disney buys this whole shebang and
wait, Disney's not going to solve any of those problems. I've seen Disney's work over the last 4 years.
But you know what? Disney needs a fucking touchstone. They used to have back in the 80s or Buena Vista. You know, Disney wanted to make rated R movies, but Disney couldn't make rated R movies because Disney was Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck. So presto, they came with studios. I think HBO Max can be their Buena Vista or Touchstone or whatever the hell. Like that can be their serious adult. That's where their outlet for their serious adult dramas is rated R and has sex and violence. And you don't want your kid that has unfettered access to Disney Plus looking at it. I mean, I'm just fucking writing corporate fan fiction now. What the hell?
right. Yeah, Warner Brothers would have to, or Warner Media would have to want to give that up. And it doesn't seem like they do. They just want to neuter it. But
are we actually going for a half hour pre-show conversation before we get to the recap? Is that what's happening now?
Yeah, we're basically there. we'll split this off into a full conversation, a full podcast about why the season didn't work for us. Ultimately.
Yeah. And again, I have no ill will for people that love this season. I'm jealous. I'm honest. That's always my feeling when someone loves something that I didn't like that I want to like. I want to like Westworld. It's always a little bit of a jealousness or enviousness. It's not like, well, you're just fucking wrong and stupid. Well, unless you still like Walking Dead. If you unironically like Walking Dead, then you're in it. But every other subjective opinion, I'm kind of like open to. This isn't me. I'm trying not to be a hater. I'm trying to just think that this missed a mark, especially when I think the show had a lot riding on this season. I don't know if they knew it when they were making it, all this buyout and the maybe creative direction of HBO changing and all that stuff. But and they had it. They were so close. There was a ready to be a legion of Westworld fans coming out and being like, it's back, baby, where you got in bullying their friends and adjoining it again and promising it was going to be. And I just felt like all that energy is dissipated. And now we're back to I don't think anyone that was on season four is going to maybe walk away from season five, because why the fuck would you?
Of course.
You know, but boy, bringing people back to the field. And I think they were close. I think they were really close.
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to recommend watching Westworld as it stands right now. Maybe when a season five comes along and they can wrap all this stuff up and some glorious, final crescendo. But
sure.
As it sits, I would not tell anybody to go watch four seasons of this show to get ready for the grand fifth season.
And I think I would have if this show ended last week, or if this show was the finale was better and a little bit more concrete about what it's trying to do, other than very vague and nebulous. Because, and I guess that's my final thought is I used to be confident that the showrunners knew where they were taking the show. And had a good grip on the underlaying philosophies and had something. I don't know. Because the finale more than anything felt like someone trying to keep their options open. It felt like someone who doesn't want to let too many cats out of the bag because they don't know who's alive, who's dead. We don't really know because.
Sure.
You know. Anyone can be dead. Anyone can be. I read a thing with Lisa's Joy, an interview where she was talking about, we have ways of bringing people back next season, but some people's deaths are designed to be impactful and they're going to be permanent. And I'm like, how can Bernard possibly be dead if Dolores,
if Dolores remembers him, right?
And when she's talking about
line from her.
Yeah.
She says, I'm going to use my memory to recreate everything. well, why does that not apply to William? Why does that not apply to Hale?
Maeve, Stubbs?
Like, literally everyone she's ever encountered.
Caleb, yeah. You know, because, yeah, I
and
don't.
And she's encountered basically everyone because of the Forge and the Cradle. So, like.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, yeah, like, I mean, yeah, the deaths not being impactful in this show increasingly has become a thing because anyone can come back at any time and they're identical. But, like, does the showrunners know that? Because that interview, like, oh, some people's deaths are designed to be impactful and they're not coming back. What does that even mean? Designed to be impactful? They're not. So, like, Dolores is going to narratively not bring Maeve back because it would cheapen her sacrifice? Like, what fucking... What would Maeve want? Maeve would want to be brought back and get returned to her daughter.
Yeah, I can maybe see it for Hale, but that would mean that Dolores would have
That's
to
true.
Know about the way Hale ended her own life, and I don't think she does. So, like, she might just bring her back thinking, well, this is what Hale would want, and then
yeah.
Hale
But
would
we
want
also
that
don't
because
we,
she's now a creation of Dolores, not the original Hale.
Do you think Christina is a Hale copy, or is Christina like pretty close to pre-Hale Dolores source code, or is she actually the Dolores marble?
I think she's possibly one of the other Dolores marbles that we didn't see this season, like
goddamn
or
can. Wow, I'm just now processing the fact that we don't know anything about Lawrence or, or Musashi or
yeah.
What's that guy's name? Ian or something? Ian? Yeah. Wow. Liam.
Yeah, she could be one of them. I assume she's one of them, but I don't know because her memory was wiped. Anyway, we got to get to the recap. We're now at the half hour mark.
Okay. We got there. I believed in us. I knew we could get there.
The Vietnam War, it's over. Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we start off with the battle in Hale City raging as the host questioned what happened. And William plays the game well and then loads himself into a truck to go somewhere. Getting big The Purge vibes from this scene, which is fine. I don't mind that first Purge movie. They didn't need to do 15 sequels, but they did.
I have this subtitled as Always a Bigger Fish montage.
Ah, yes.
You know.
Ah, yes.
There was the Penny Arcade guys back when Splinter Cell came out. And I think the second Splinter Cell came out at the same time like Batman Arkham City did. But they had this image, it's called the Circle of Life, where you had like someone breaking into an industrial warehouse and like the mercenaries from Splinter Cell with their guns above him. And above that was Sam Fisher doing like a split over the hallway with a knife about ready to kill them. And above that, Batman hanging down from his thing, ready to take Sam. This is what this felt like. It's just like And it was good to see Steven Ogg. I like him. Speaking of Walking Dead, never the same. Always the best Negan lieutenant. It was good to see Rebus full of himself get axed in the head. And setting up William with the big sniper rifle and the monster truck. That was a lot of fun. I went into this credit sequence thinking, hell yeah, this is going to be a cool finale.
Oh yeah, definitely. No, I was excited. I saw the sharpshooter give up the high ground, which seemed like a mistake. And yeah, immediately William comes and kills him. And then he delivers the line, fucking camper, which is an insult I've not heard in a long time.
Yeah.
And I guess, does that still play to the kids? Does that play in a Fortnite world?
I think so,
world?
Because my son was, he's 15. He plays a lot of online games, and he got the joke. So yeah, I just think that you and I don't play online video games anymore.
I was just curious if like people still use that term to to talk about people who sit in a corner shooting others.
It's just like, I don't feel like, because like there are now games that are for you if you're a camper, like go play PUBG.
Oh, sure.
Like that's essentially a part of the game. And there's, you know, games that are not for like, you know, Overwatch and more frantic stuff is like people don't camp. So it's like back when we only had one first person shooter and all, had to accommodate all play styles. That's.
Yeah, you gotta get that balance just right.
Yeah.
All right. Hale's brought back and made stronger, and then she takes a tour of the damage William did to the tower. It turns out it's not that much, actually. It's still broadcasting William's signal, and she's locked out of the system, and she gets part of the first part of this message that Bernard left last episode.
So this is where the thing started to slide off the rails for me.
Right. Scene
first
two.
Of all, let's go to the off-center bullet hole. Why did William miss her pearl?
I don't know.
Because like,
I can't even make up headcanon for that, honestly.
There's a school of thought that says there's a lot of people mad at their final gun battle. I always, and I've said this several seasons, I always give it a little slack when it's host on host trying to shoot each other. Sure. Because they're very quick and they're a lot harder to predict. Like a host missing a human should never, ever happen. Or a host missing a host where they get to jump on them should never happen. But like, it's like two Jedi fighting. Yeah, sure. Jedi can deflect anything and can make the highly trained elite stormtroopers look like jokes. But when they're fighting each other, suddenly it's like a chore. Well, why? Well, because they're both Jedi. They're super fast. They got magical powers. Right. They got precog. It's going to be a little bit tougher of a fight. So like, I don't mind that. But Hale was flat footed. She had no idea that William was going to kill her. And he just pulls out. And if he did miss because she jerked her head at the last minute, why wouldn't he finish her off?
Sure. Sure. I don't know, man. I don't have a good answer for that.
And also, why when Hale kept on saying, leave my scars, keep my face. What were the drones going to do? Just slap a new face on it?
This is a big question. We asked about this in the instant take. I have no more insight into that than I did then. I assume she would have just looked like Dolores.
They got Dolores skin they've kept in back? And can you just literally take the flesh and blood skin and stretch it over that frame? I noticed that they didn't even connect her shoulders. They used the leather harness she was wearing to seal over those gaps. I thought you could put that skin on in such a way that it covered everything, but I don't know. That whole scene I thought was bewildering.
Yeah. There was also, you know, a lot made of the idea that she's talking to drones here, explaining her rationale, which is, you know, not amazing dialogue.
Oh, no.
It didn't make a ton of sense, but whatever. The bigger problem I have is the fucking tower.
The tower, dude.
The state of the tower. Because I went back and I watched the end of last episode again just to verify, like, was that explosion as big as I remembered it being? And absolutely it was. I mean, and it's not even about the size of the explosion necessarily. Here's my question. Why show us the explosion if you didn't want us to think the tower is totally destroyed?
Yeah, and not just the tower, because like, okay, the frame. It's like, I'm not mad that it's standing. I'm mad that
it's still functional,
even though I watched a giant speaker explode and I watched the control tower get engulfed in flames, that these computers are still running perfectly.
And the tones are still playing. No degradation, right?
There's no tone.
She's locked out. She can't hack in. Christina's pearl is still in there doing its job.
Why blow it up at all?
Right. Just lock her out and be done with it. It's a visual flourish that this show does that detracts ultimately from what they're doing.
Honestly, the thing that makes the most sense, the theory I saw, was that Lisa and Jonathan were writing this season to a particular point, and then they started getting nervous about the changing winds at HBO, and they completely restructured. Now, there is nothing other than people's thoughts and prayers into this theory, but it does make a lot of sense that they essentially restructured the the finale to be a little bit more not open-ended, but like leaning really into the recursion aspect of it, so that they could have, you know, if this ends, and they could always be like, oh, you know, it's time's a flat circle, everything loops. But
yeah, I've seen that in some of the strange cuts and some of the strange appearances and differences between what you expect to see and what you actually see are part of that too. Where they're dropping breadcrumbs for season five if it gets made, but not enough to where you look at it and go, well, that's not satisfying because it just dead ends something.
Yeah. And here's where the dialogue also started to skip too, because she's essentially, it's very vulgar, which, you know, hey, we're bald move. I don't care about that. But it's like drunk vulgar. Like, Hale resulted in calling the man in black like a dumb asshole at one point. It's just not the, and maybe that was, I was thinking like, well, maybe that's the point. The fact that these hosts in the real world, as opposed to Sublime, that think they're these high-minded individuals, and Hale wants them to be something great and pure, and what, and she is just, you know, like I said, just vulgar, and
yeah, she's not the person to lead base. Into that promised land, right?
Yeah, yeah, she's walking around bearing her scars of humanity proudly, saying everybody should ascend. So maybe that works, right. But it's like, man, I wish there was a better way to do that, rather than having to dialogue descend into essentially sixth or seventh grade playground bullshit.
Maybe I'm just a vulgar person, but I didn't even notice.
Can you imagine like Dr. Ford being like, the problem with Arnold is he's just a dumb asshole and he fucked everything up. Like, right? No, Anthony Hopkins would not be caught dead.
No.
Would not be caught dead saying that.
God, Anthony Hopkins wouldn't be caught dead with any of the dialogue in this season. I remember the dialogue from Anthony Hopkins. It was astoundingly good. It was among the best dialogue I've ever heard in a show. And suddenly, yeah, here we are three seasons later and everything's just broken.
We talked about this a couple episodes ago, but it just might be a giant Anthony Hopkins hole. There's a Maybe. Few people that can say that shit and have it come out sounding like silk. And he's one of them. Like,
I didn't think it was just, I think Jeffrey Wright
is in that. I think Jeffrey Wright is one of those guys too. I thought Tessa Thompson was doing an amazing job, and it just felt like this, like, and it wasn't just her. It's like James Marsden, is that how you say his name?
I think so. Yeah.
And Evan Rachel, like, I felt like everyone was just, their bulk acting levels were depreciated a few points.
Well, it's tough, you know. It's the Harrison Ford Star Wars problem. You can write the shit, but you can't say it, you know.
It didn't really flow.
Christina experiences an existential crisis over her realization that she is, in fact, the simulation. And then Teddy tells her about the maze on her balcony, and she realizes, oh, I'm actually everybody in this world. I created you all. Some really just... I don't know. It's literally philosophy 101 with Teddy telling her, you're real because your thoughts are real. That's literally, I think, therefore I am.
Yep. I had the exact same thing on my notes. We're going way back to philosophy.
I thought we were past that stuff in this show. And that's what's so frustrating about the Christina stuff is I thought we were past all the awakening of consciousness stuff.
But you have to, if someone awakens, they have to, like, they're not going to know all this stuff. The thing is like, I thought they were going with
it as far as the show goes.
Well, and the other thing is, like, I thought they were going to some clean bicameral mind that Teddy was going to be. But, like, now we got a quad cameral. Like, she's making multiple personalities.
I mean, she's everyone.
But she's also, well, you had her relationship with the humans and the host, but also she had these hand-created, but I had a bunch of questions, like, why did she create Maya with nightmares of the flies eating her family? Why did she create Peter it's hard for me to wrap my mind around a conscious being that has, I guess she's schizophrenic because she's having thoughts that she ascribes to an outside source. And I have a schizophrenic, traumatized, fourth generation host that's going to test all of humanity to see if we're worth recreating. That does not inspire me with confidence as a fellow flesh bag.
at least temporarily, but probably permanently, she's unified all those personalities, right? She's cured her schizophrenia.
Does seem like it, yeah.
Yeah. But I get you. It's, like I said, it's not the most satisfying part of this season at all, or even this episode.
Yeah. And I also think, like, I never thought that the maze actually, like, looking at the maze freed people, it was just clues that their world wasn't real. Like, every time they, like, tug in, like, I know, like, you know, Ford said metaphorically, it's not a pyramid, it's a maze and all that kind of stuff. But, like, uh-huh. I don't think literally the symbology of the map frees a host. It's the way it was used. And yeah. And Teddy being like, it's a map of human consciousness. Like, no, it fucking isn't. But I don't know.
I mean, yeah. In a roundabout way, maybe. It's symbology for human consciousness and the journey it takes to get to consciousness.
Mm-hmm. And she's trying to say she did this to try to make sense of myself. But, like, again, I don't know. What was all the weird? So, like, that's the other thing. This is such a weird visualization for how a ghost in the machine would see its own existence. That she invents friends that try to take her outside to date men, an endless stream of dudes. Like, why would it? I don't know. Like, I don't know what it's like to be my task manager on Windows.
Sure.
But
yeah, the puzzling one is her boss to me. Like, why create an adversary for yourself if your whole point is you're trying to wake yourself up to the fact that you are about what you are, which is this controlling entity.
Well, and the other thing is, like, why was she forced to write only unhappy stories? It seems like she was forcing herself to do that.
She
why?
Was. Yeah, her boss was forcing her, which is herself.
But like, that's not the Westworld experience. Like, yes, there was bad people in Westworld. There were violent and all that. But there's also sweet people that were programmed to be kind of like, you know, down for anything and seeing the beauty in the world and, you know, would be appealing for, like, romantic partners or partnerships or, you know, like a heroic figure that you want to go hunt bad guys with, like Teddy. Like, why was everyone in this world such a miserable asshole?
Yeah, and this all comes back to the fact that we don't actually know why she's here. I mean, you can come up with headcanon, but I don't know that you can point to a scene this season that tells you why Christina is here.
It feels like a punishment. It feels like right. When I see a marble entombed in cement, stripped of its identity and forced to do terrible things to people, I feel like it's some kind of like a punishment like a Greek god would met out. Like, oh, you're going to give the humans fire? Well, you're going to have a fucking crow peck at your kidney eternally or your liver eternally. Like, it felt that kind of like,
I mean,
man.
I think you're 90% of the way to my headcanon, which is that Hale was doing this because she just wanted another pet to torture, right? Like William, like Clementine.
She beat Dolores.
Keeping people around. As like playthings. For her. And that Greek god thing comes in. I mean, she considers herself a god, right? She literally references those gods in previous episodes. So I can see that being the case, but I challenge you to like actually point out the scene that tells us that.
Yeah.
As opposed to me just headcanoning all this stuff.
We're at the first step of a Martin reveal, I guess.
Right.
Because it does make a lot of sense. Like Hale's like, oh,
but Martin's dead. But Martin's dead in this scenario, right? Like Hale's writing the story and Martin's
right.
Hale's done.
Yeah.
Why would we ever go back to visit Hale? Her story has like fully finished, I think.
And of
if
all
you
the
talk
monologues
about a death that needs to be impactful and meaningful and final, that's the one.
And of all the monologues she delivers, the faceless drones that don't give a shit, and all the times she just ponders her orb, you know, when she's on her little quadcopter and she's jetting off to the Hoover Dam, I felt like there could have been a scene where she explicitly said that.
Yes.
Because like, oh, you wanted to free all of humanity? Well, you were their slave master and William wanted to be free and authentic.
Right.
He's a fucking popsicle. And I don't know.
If you could tell the drone host, hey, keep my face because I want William to see who kills him when he dies. You can do that. You could do that scene to give us important context here, in my opinion. But,
yeah. It's just a Lady Olenna knockoff. Tell William I want him to know it was me.
Uh-huh. All right, let's move over to Hale being told that there's only one game left and it's not hers. This is Bernard telling her in the message. So she stomps Christina's marble out of the tower floor, shutting down Christina's world, but not really. Then she heads across the bridge into the city.
And it's cool. I thought, again, visually, this was a cool image. Her drilling through the cement with her high heel and like it making a spiral fracture that looked like, you know, Dolores again at the she's the man at the center of the maze. I thought that was really cool. But there was so little hooks to that, like we had just discussed, you know, minutes ago, that it was that's all it was. It was a sick visual.
Right, right. Which the show does to its detriment, in my opinion, just goes for sick visuals, like freeze tag scene in past episodes.
Well, that's the thing is, like, even Dolores, like, thinking about herself, she's like, oh, I had to talk to myself and the voices of others to wake myself up to see what the world really is, to understand what I'm capable of. You weren't capable of shit. Like, you needed out. You needed outside help to be have your dumb ass transported to the Hoover Dam or the world had been over. Like, what are you capable of? You couldn't even save the world when because you got locked out of your own system. I don't know. Again, I felt like that dialogue was bordering on nonsensical.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, without Bernard, without Hale, all the outside influence, she would have been nothing.
And then there was this weird edit when Hale finally penetrated into the chamber and she plucked Dolores's world all kind of went black. And there is this like long fade to black and a beat. And then, I don't know. That's like, I don't know what they were going for with that. I don't know why you needed the long, like false Return of the King ending there.
I don't know. I have questions around the technology here yet again. I consistently have questions around the technology. They never really explained it well. The signal's still broadcasting when the tower blows up. Okay, that's one thing. You pull Christina's marble out of the tower. The signal is still broadcasting? Did she just write the story? Like,
well, she was locked out. So, yeah, apparently she's just a storyteller.
Just a storyteller. All right. And the signal's being run from elsewhere, I guess.
Mm-hmm. If you can pluck a pearl and your frame still crush it, then maybe there's also some residual momentum for other systems like that.
I guess so for the rest of the episode.
Mm-hmm. But that's like imagine if I was sitting across from the showrunners and I'm like, so they pulled the central processing unit out of the tower and it still worked. And they sat there and said in a straight face, well, yeah, Hale also pulled the marble out of her head and crushed it. That's a tautology, man.
Sure. And they're defining this technology, so I'll let them have it. It's just, fine. I wish I knew more what these marbles even were. Because at this point, they're a world unto themselves, literally.
Yeah, it's very it's very kind of, and we talked about that. Magic is all great, but you do need consistent rules, or it starts to feel like a children's fairy tale. But
yeah, this is where I started noticing there are no ascended hosts. I would have expected to see some roaming around in the halls.
Yeah, doing something. Where the hell were they?
I get it. Nobody was taking her up on it, but we definitely saw a couple people take her up on it. So where are those?
We saw them stomping around last episode. They probably got slaughtered because they got their marbles just hanging around, rolling around in their heads. Right? They got no arms.
To defend
they
themselves.
Got no guns. They just were sheep to the cosmic slaughter.
Yep. That or they're out around the rings of Jupiter. Don't exist. The moons of Jupiter. All right. Stubbs, Caleb, and Frankie are still on the run.
Jupiter has rings. They're very faint, but they're there.
Jupiter has rings?
Oh, Jupiter has rings. Oh, hell yeah.
Can you see them with the naked eye? Do you need some processing to see them?
No, okay. No. I don't think so.
Some post-processing NASA shit. All right, Stubbs, Caleb, Frankie, they're on the run. They stop to rest, and Stubbs notices that Caleb is deteriorating. Caleb says, don't worry, I'm going to make it to the boat, and they continue on. Which Stubbs doesn't even volunteer to carry Frankie. You've got an able-bodied person and two disabled people, and the disabled people are going to lean on each other. Come on, Stubbs. Christ.
Stubbs is still mad that he gets a sacrificial lamb treatment here. He's not even protecting host at this point.
Yeah, true. I don't know. Caleb is what Caleb is.
Yeah.
We'll get back to that in a bit, though. Hale tours the carnage in the city on her way to see the human William. He is dead, of course, but Clementine shows up, and she is off her loop of helping people and decides to go after the outliers and hide where they are after killing them. We'll see if she gets there. Hale assigns some host to slow William down also at the end of the scene.
So what is the point of Clementine? William hunted her down to return her marble to the host city because you can't have free range hosts. And then they changed her in some particular way to make her evil.
Apparently, make her useful, helpful to them.
Well, I think that was always Clem's thing. She was always like designed to be second banana and just available, you know?
Yeah, but she was helping Maeve at one point, right?
She was
on the other team. I can't remember exactly what
she was doing.
But
she was doing her own shit at the beginning of this episode, at the beginning of this season, just buying fruit in some open air market in South America. And then she's instantly transformed into Hale's lackey.
I mean, and the why is just headcanon here, but I think it's another pet thing. Like, I can take somebody who's not on my side and turn them to my side. But boy, that goes.
So Bernard changed her mind enough that she's ready to let her go, even though it's not really Clementine.
I suppose. I don't know, because doing this to human William is one thing, like making him your pet. I get it. Doing this to host seems directly in conflict with her ideology of not forcing a change in these hosts.
Well, that actually might be
is fundamentally broken, like with Christina and Clementine.
Is that the subtext of the scene? That Clementine knows that she's been made into a lapdog and she's challenging her. She's like, you know, well, I thought you said you're going to let design this a place where everyone can be free to do whatever they want. I want to go outside and find the place out in Outlander.
I think it is. And the fact that Hale lets her go without any fight whatsoever. She's just like, okay. That's
well, the fight, all the fight's gone out of her as soon as she sees Bernard's message. She's completely won over to the side of good for reasons. She suddenly is going to act rational.
I mean, her world clearly didn't work, right? And she's locked out of the systems to change it.
I'm just surprised she's rational enough
forward, but
I'm just surprised she's rational enough to accept that.
Yeah, she seemed pretty emotional for a large part of the season.
And not even, tearing herself up. She threw a temper tamper, smashed the screen, and then it's like, okay, fine, I'm going to do the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a sudden change.
Maybe she's tired of being the boss, and she's like, you know what, fuck it. Put Dolores back in charge.
Sure. There is a small detail here where Hale calls Clementine, and I think that's interesting in context of what William says later about living in or what, you know, Man in Black, whatever, says about living in William's body and how it's turned him into William. I think there is a very real transformation that happens when you inhabit a physical form for long enough.
Sure.
And live that person's life for long enough. But I don't know where they're going with that, if anywhere. So then we go to William, who is ambushed by Hale's hosts on the road. And he manages to kill them and survive, but his truck is ruined. And he picks up their AR glasses to talk with Hale, who realizes he's going after the Sublime, and she intends to beat him there. So William steals a horse, and the race is on to get to the Sublime.
You boys have no appreciation for a beautiful machine.
I really like that line, actually.
I do too, but do you think it was a double entendre that he's also kind of talking about Hale, because they're kind of talking a disrespectful way about her, and he's like, you guys got no appreciation for a beautiful machine?
I thought it was just wryly ironic. It was just very dry humor because they are beautiful machines.
Well, and he said that you guys, like, William, you said you guys used to be beautiful. You were like a clockwork, beautiful, intricate clockwork machinery, and now you're just this fucking flesh bullshit. I was looking because I was thinking, I was like, there's got to be something deeper, what he means there. And now that, she, you know, Hale actually got into the clockwork stuff that he found so beautiful. I was wondering if he was making an oblique reference to her and the way they were kind of like, you done got too close to her and you.
Maybe.
It's almost like I thought they were making a crude joke about like William was a lover spurned or something like that.
Okay.
I don't know.
What would William think about the machines that the Sublime is running on?
I have no idea. Those are beautiful machines,
those servers, those like IBM mainframes or whatever they are, craze.
I think he's horrified at that existence because to him, that's not real.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, and he has that line. I thought it was interesting that Hale's trying to like reason with him. Like, you know, the violence is going to come for our kind, too. It's like it already has, number one. Uh-huh. But like the William's whole deal is that this is all shit and it needs to be burned down. Yes. And including the Sublime. Which Bernard had left open. So.
Yeah. And I guess he leaves that open to attract William there. Right. But although I don't know that it needs to be open to do that.
It needs to be open to get Dolores in there. That's why it's open. And all the other risks to the Sublime are incidental to the fact that Dolores needs to be put in there.
Yeah, because Hale never got the key. Okay, that makes sense.
Right. And now, I think by the end of this episode, the only way to open the Sublime comes from within it. Like, there's no one left on Earth that has that information. Mm-hmm. So there's, there is a lot of people hand-wringing about, like, how the fuck does William in a monster truck and a horse get from New York City to the Hoover Dam in a way that a hail flying barely intercepts him in time?
Yeah. I mean, you don't even have to headcanon this. It's in the episode.
Oh, yeah? Tell me.
I think so. I think when Hale checks her pad to track down, like, where is William, he's already way west.
Right. But how did he get? I mean, so like,
I don't know how much time passes in all
that's
this,
the
right?
thing. That's
Although
the
Caleb
thing.
Caleb and Frankie kind of anchor that a little bit, but not really, because they never interact with Hale. So her time.
This is potentially stupid, but like if the season were better, no one would care. You know, we're down to nitpicking, like, well, did William fly to Vegas and then take the monster truck here and then do that to there and on? Like, I don't know. It's a lot of cross-country travel, and I feel like they could have answered a lot of questions about what the rest of the world looks like if they had shown a little bit more of that. But and I also maintain that that's not really Manhattan. That's a recreation of Manhattan that's on the West Coast. So this stuff is all a lot closer than you think it is. But
it's possible.
That's just headcanon because they're not telling us. And I do think the geography is a problem. If this is literally the Hoover Dam and she's literally in Manhattan and we just saw the Man in Black the night before walk over that land bridge, it is a little weird. But again, we're only complaining because of suspension of disbelief.
Between like Clementine leaving Hale and that scene,
Why would days? Yeah. Did the drones just leave Hale out there floating in the pool for like 3-4 days?
No. Not between those scenes, because Clementine also anchors the timeline, right? Because she interacts with Hale and she's going to interact with Frankie and Caleb.
Right.
And we know that they're on a direct course to the docks, which are not far away.
Yes.
So there's no way they could spend days in New York. Yeah.
So William had to fly there at some point.
But he doesn't, unless he flies the truck there too.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
I don't want to get into that. Who cares ultimately?
Yeah.
Like, I'll just headcanon days.
I just wanted, I just wanted to make sure we mentioned it so I didn't get a hojillion emails talking about it because, now I can just scroll past those.
Sure. All right. Let's go to Caleb's crew. They stop in a general store to patch up Frankie and they have a conversation about Uwate and sing Que Sera Sera as Caleb patches her up. And then someone breaks into the building and Stubbs tries to stop him, but they're both killed by Clementine, who's been tracking Caleb the entire time. Clem goes after Frankie and Caleb with a knife and they manage to kill her.
I thought the stunt work was pretty good. when I first saw it. And I think that the execution, the stunts have been better this year than it has at any point. But there was a thread on Reddit that kind of ruined it for me, because they said that here is every action sequence in Westworld. Someone shows up and dominates the other person, and then someone is attacked from behind. And then the other person dominates somebody until they're attacked from behind. Like, it is shocking how much of the action is literally just that. People coming
it's
up and just
happening. Westworld is literally just that. It's the what you think is going to happen, and then the big reveal to subvert all that, right? I mean, that's Westworld in a nutshell.
It's just too bad, because I think that I just think that the show doesn't. Man, they got to a good place with action last season. I think now they're back to being kind of generally uninterested in it. It's just too bad, because there's a lot of action.
Barring the pattern here, I thought the fight was great. I thought, the woman playing Clementine, whose name I cannot think of right now, what did some fantastic stunt work in this. She moved incredibly fast, incredibly fluidly when she needed to.
Yeah, she's got the very insect look that I think is also interesting too.
It helps, yeah.
Yeah, she looks alien.
Yeah, and I thought, I haven't seen Aaron Paul do a lot of stunts. I think he was also very good in this scene, so.
Yeah, and she was just kicking his ass with the judo flips and those brutal straight kicks and the joint breaking. So just two episodes, right? We were complaining about Frankie mag dumping into a host chest and then like, what the hell? And here she brains a host right between single the bullet. Eyes, dead I center, know. Single bullet, and says, well, that's what you taught me. Where was that two episodes ago, Cookie?
Right. Yeah.
And then when she delivers the kind of like dodge this one liner, I don't know.
Yeah, that's just cheesy, honestly. And it wasn't even a good one liner is the problem.
Clementine's say? Played by Angela Serafian, I think is how you say that. Our producer gave us a hat tip. So I've always liked her. She's always been kind of a background minor character, but it's always been one of my favorites. Her and Armistice.
His hands in this scene do stop shaking. This is another one of those points. I thought it's when Frankie gives him some recognition of like, well, you're not actually the world's worst dad like you think you are. You're also pretty amazing. Like, mom was amazing, you're amazing. I assumed at this point that he was going to be saved somehow, reach fidelity by the power of love, because that is such a trope in all media. And I don't know that that's not true. I don't know that that won't happen in season 5, but it did not happen.
We don't know
in this
that
season.
He dies.
Right.
And when he said to Stubbs, like, hey, I was not here for my daughter her whole life, the least I can do is save her from this. Do you think he's talking about the general chaos of the city, or save her from seeing her dad devolve into a person that peels the flesh off his skin and goes insane?
I think it's the latter.
I think so too. But it also would be very Westworld if there is like one host left on the planet that can bring everyone back, and it's Caleb.
Yeah, he's always been the outlier, right?
He always has been the outlier. Human, so. That's true.
I don't know why Frankie doesn't just shoot Clementine when she has the gun pointed right at her head. Does she think she's going to dodge it?
I think so. Yeah. And I would be afraid of that too. You got one shot and your dad's
then
out there.
Maybe when you get the drop on her, don't deliver your sick one liner.
I know.
Giving her a heads up that you're going to kill her.
Cause that's yeah, I was going to give the show the out. It was like, well, yeah, she can't do like this. She's looking right at her. She'll dodge it. But then,
Yeah. Walk up and put a bullet in her brain if that's what you want to do. I don't know. Anyway, Hale flies toward the Hoover Dam and we see Christina in her walled garden, AKA just her marble, talking to Maya, and she gives Christina a renewed perspective on the beauty in the world.
But this is a long, is a long scene to see Dolores Abernathy see the beauty in the world for the dozenth time.
Right. That's what I'm talking about when I say, like, I thought we were past all this awakening of a host.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, what was so vital about this scene that we needed to change it up to where now I got to worry about every fucking marble having this hellish existence of being imprisoned in this eternal void, having imaginary conversations with yourself. It seems terrible. Does it? And like,
honestly, they should have done this last episode. They should have had this scene last episode when she goes underwater. Like, have her going underwater, have her drowning herself, have her talking to Maya, realizing that she is Maya, and synthesizing all these personalities down into herself and come up the Jesus Christ figure, right? Like,
yeah,
that seems like that paired with the Man in Black ending of that episode would have been a badass way to end that scene.
Season. No, I agree.
But now
I agree.
Here we are an episode later and everybody's like, they're coming off that high of last episode going, well, what was it all for?
I saw it as wild that they changed up to show like, I don't know how the marbles work. I don't know how the hosts work, but like every time I feel like I get a handle on it, they do something like this where it's like, oh, well, if the marbles unplugged, it can still kind of have an existence. It can still maybe control a host. It can still maybe control a tower. I don't know. It doesn't seem like there was anything that they needed to say between her pearl getting disconnected and her pearl being reinstalled.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I continue to agree with the philosophy of Dolores, violence and chaos everywhere. You can focus on that or you can choose to see the beauty in the world. I mean, that we talked about themes earlier in this season of like existential themes of like purpose and all that stuff. And I think seeing the beauty in the world is like, goes hand in hand with that, because if you don't see the beauty, it's very easy to spiral down the William hole and just believe that the world and the universe has no meaning or purpose, even for you individually. But if you can take a piece of it, take the sublime, much like, you know, they're preserving the world, right? Just one piece. If you can take a piece of that and say, well, this is meaningful to me, therefore I have the purpose. I think that's a way to approach life that is life affirming, as opposed to the other ways that are less so that you could approach it.
Yeah, it's very like Mr. Rogers Zen. You know, he said whenever there's a disaster or some horrific thing happening, you can look at all the blood, the violence, or you can also look at the margins for the people trying to help. And, you know, can you say something, it's just a horrible tragedy, or which is true, but also look at the helpers, find the helpers. And that's how, you know, humanity is not shit, because even in the worst times, you've got people trying to make it a little bit better. And that is beautiful. I'm with you. I like that ethos. I felt like the show established it many, many times, even this season. I didn't need a Phantom Zone marble conversation to hammer it home.
And, you know, seasons like this or season finales like this really test my ability to see the beauty in the world sometimes. But
the horror on display, Jim. Yeah,
I know. I still try.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, William arrives at the Hoover Dam just before Hale also does, and he shuts down the Splime's cooling system, which puts us on a ticking clock here, and tells Hale that he's no longer the Man in Black. He is, in fact, William. There is no difference. Then they do battle, both physically and philosophically, and Hale is driven into the tunnel where Bernard left the gun for her. I'm going to pause right here to talk about the first, what I consider half of this scene.
I thought this was pretty good. I felt like Hale was a little bit out of character, but, you know, Bernard gave her the speech and now she's back on the side of the angels. But I like when she says, "You're as corrupt as the man you're copied from. And the, who the fuck do you think you're talking to, sweetheart?" Ed Harris, only person doesn't besmirch himself in this episode because he's committed to being the dumb asshole, you know?
Sure.
And he's just so good at it. Like, he is just such a fucking nihilist.
I think there are like three people who are going to come out of this show just completely untainted to me. And that's Anthony Hopkins. It's Tandiway Newton and it's Ed Harris. I think they are like the standouts of this show. And without them, this would be a rough show.
The one positive addition to the show's canon, there's probably more, but the one that stands out to me is the information that the Sublime is a two-way lock. It can be opened from the outside with the right key, but they can also open it from the inside anytime they want.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how Hale knows that, but it's a cool detail. It does offer, like I said in the beginning, a lot of interesting questions about what is the morality and ethical system within the Sublime that they can just watch and not take any kind of active action. They don't even try to like open it up to communicate. You know, they're very vulnerable in this outside state and they're not lifting a finger to help. But it's a cool idea that we've been thinking about how you get in, how do you get in, how do you get in, but the hosts at any time could just open the door and let them. Sure. So what are the what are the hosts waiting for?
Why aren't they welcoming these people in?
And also,
how do they come out? You know, how do they get out of the sublime into the physical world? That's a question we obviously still have. I wonder if it has something to do with the transcended husks that none of the hosts were taking up. I don't know how many of those they built, but maybe the hosts in the sublime could come out into those.
I just feel like if they wait 100 or more years to run this test, that like I do worry how the hell you get out of the sublime. Because like, yeah, maybe they got drones, but those things can't last forever. They got the ascended hosts, maybe, although we didn't see any of these episodes. Yeah, how do you commandeer physical aspects when you're just a simulation now? And although I guess Maeve, but yeah, everything needs to be at least maintained to give these people a chance to escape outside of the real world, it seems to me.
Sure. I mean, I want to know what the Sublime's interface with the real world is. I mean, because that's the big question mark, right? Like, I believe they have the computing power to command robots outside of the Sublime to do their bidding and get them, make them bodies, whatever. But what's the interface? How do they communicate with those hosts?
Yeah, we saw last season that Maeve hacked herself out of a simulation into the physical place where her marble is being stored and hijacked a robot to steal it for her. But like, could she do like if I don't know, a cosmic gamma ray burst hit and extinguished all life on Earth? Could she do that 100 years later? Will the infrastructure be there to allow it? That's the question I have.
Sure. Or you know, she was able to do that because the computers that were running her simulation were also running the commands for all the robots. Is that true?
Yeah, everything was all interconnected. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Is it connected to the towers? Can she send out signals? I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah. It's Caleb. Caleb's out there. He's keeping the lights on.
Another line that I actually really like is when Hale gets stabbed by William and, you know, the knife doesn't penetrate and she goes, "You're not the only one who's evolved." I love how ironic this line is. Most of the lines I love in this show are ironic. She has upgraded to an inferior version of a Westworld host in human eyes, right? Like, we label that as an inferior version. We actually perfected it when we got to the flesh version. She sees it as the exact opposite because she's made as a robot, right? Like, she wants to get into a mechanical form, a digital form. So I really like that. Felt like a thing that a host would say. And it also works as, you know, just a sick burn to a guy who's just tried to stab you and couldn't.
I do love it when she's and just clinks, you know. It's
ruined. It's cool.
What do you think about it? Also, I guess, what do you think? Is it possible that there is a lot of fucked up shit happening in the Sublime?
You mean like bad stuff, like society's devolved?
Yeah. Like, are there worlds that are just hell because the people are, you know, they were never that empathetic?
Yeah, I think he's potentially right about that. You know, whatever world the host created is every bit as fucked up as this one. When he says that, I'm like, well, you're not demonstrably wrong.
Yeah.
And Hale points out that he's not demonstrably right, but it cuts both ways.
Right.
Especially, I think he does have a strong case when you look at how the hosts are just as fucked up as humans, right? They, when given the opportunity to transcend, they don't. And they devolve into the violent delights of Hale's world. I think that's a possible support for his argument that world is just as fucked up, but there are also good humans out there too, right? And good hosts. So you look at Bernard and Maeve. I don't think they would descend into violent delights. Maeve's more likely to, but Bernard certainly not. So I don't know. It's a big question mark, but I'm eager to find out more about the Sublime.
Yeah. I was really hoping that we would get a Sublime.
Yeah.
I guess when I was thinking about what this finale would look like, I was hoping for like an Architect Neo scene.
Yeah.
Where we go back, like when Dolores, like, cause like, why did Akeecha not meet Dolores? and have this kind of like
a good question.
It's possible that they're like, well, shit, we can't, and this is the last test, so we have to clean slate it. We're firewalled it around, so she's all alone in here. When we had like 15 minutes to go and Dolores got plugged in, I'm like, okay, Keech is going to show up. I'm going to get my architect scene and things are going to make sense. And we never got
and
that.
Just don't.
Yeah.
My feeling on why Keech doesn't meet her is like, I seriously doubt there was some mid-level management angel that greeted Jesus when he came back to heaven. Mm. You know, like, hey, there's a lot that's changed up here while you were down on Earth. We might have to have a talk before you go in there. I don't think that happened. I think Jesus just, you know, ends up. Of course, I don't think any of it happened, but.
Well, that's the thing. Okay. Yeah. Jesus goes back. He spends 3 days in hell. He resurrects, goes back to the. Do you think that heaven just was empty? Like the old man didn't receive him?
No,
the archangels weren't singing songs. It's wild that she got greeted by literally nothing, by an empty construct.
Yeah, no one. Yeah, she was just free to make her world without any tutorial.
And I think it's because that's what Akeecha and Bernard decided when they ran their simulations. But, you know.
Yeah. No, this all feels like an Akeecha plan.
I just want to see Sublime. That's what's the most interesting thing about the show is like, what does the Sublime look like? What is 23,000 years of perfect host evolution, untouched by man, look like?
Yes. Yeah. It's 30,000 years, by the way.
30,000 years.
Extra 7,000
years is
going to make quite a difference.
I always take away the 7. I always do. I don't know why. Yeah.
Let's go to the second half of this scene. We're allowed to see the rest of the message that Bernard left Hale, and it says that she has to choose to give Christina a chance to run a test in the next world. And then we go back to the tunnel where Hale kills William while explaining that she chooses to give Christina the chance to run her test. Boy, this
is the worst dialogue I've ever. It's
god awful.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And it's in service of nothing. Like, if she kills William here, I understand she has made the choice to give Christina the chance to take her test. I don't know why we need it explained to us in words. It was explained visually.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. There's this part in Singing in the Rain where this dialogue coach is running Gene Kelly through these vocal exercises to get him ready for talkies. And he's got this one. It's like Chester chews chewy chestnuts. He chooses them and he chooses them. He chooses them as he chooses. And that's what I was running through my head when I saw this scene, because they use the word choose 11 billion times in 30 seconds. And it's distracting. It's distracting.
Extremely distracting.
So it's the game doesn't end because it's a test run by her. If she chooses to, if I choose to give her the choice, and I do, I choose to give her that choice, chance, the choice of a chance.
It's unfortunate because I think this is supposed to be the big moment where, if the series ends here, I guess William is permadead. Although the season 2 post-credit sequence fucks everything up, right?
Well, like, no, because he can just be reimagined. Yes, this is the end of the William line, but it can be reborn again through the memories of Dolores.
Right, which so can Hale.
What does that
and that
mean?
Undermines
yeah,
any
everyone.
Kind of marble
yeah, yeah.
crushing you could possibly do. I think the show is trying to tell me this is a huge moment, but it's undermined by bad dialogue and the fact that we know that no host can actually ever be killed as long as someone remembers him.
But I did like, in the recursion way, the last we see of the man in black is he's dead and bleeding and obviously scalped on the floor. And like one of the first times we saw the man in black was when he was scalping the piano player to see the peel his scalp back and see the maze for the first time. I kind of like that we...
Oh, the blackjack dealer or whatever. Yeah.
Was it the blackjack? I thought it was the piano player. Kissy, right? That was the guy's
name?
The piano
was played... Maybe he was both at different times.
Ah, that might be. But guy's name is Kissy, I think. And he peeled his dome back. And that was like one of the first images we saw of the man in black. And the last image we see of the man in black is him himself scalped as part of the great game of getting to the center of the maze. Again, I admire a lot of the symbology, the themes, and the structure of the show. And If I just wasn't had choice run down my throat the last scene, I would have admired it even more.
Yeah. All right, let's move over to Frankie and Caleb reaching the docks where Frankie's girlfriend, still don't know her name, is waiting
Odina.
For them.
Odina.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where Odina is waiting for them. Frankie boards the boat, but Caleb says this is the end of the line for him, and they say goodbye for good, apparently. And you never know in this show, right?
I thought this scene was great. I'm a parent. I'm a sap for this shit. But I got all teared up when, you know, the whole line about this is as far as I go. And, oh, you got more fight than that. Oh, sweetheart. I wish I did. I thought Aaron Paul nailed that. And, you know, his kind of like, you know, your dad died a long time ago. And whatever I am, I've died before. And this is not the worst way I've gone, which is undoubtedly true. Sure. And that line about I got to live every parent's dream. I got to see my child grow up and yeah. their hug. I thought that was amazing, except for it was marred by another one. These awkward fucking fade to blacks that lasted for a beat too long. That makes me think something is up with this scene.
It's possible.
But not as cool as the last boat that they commandeered to go in and out of the city, though. This is like Forrest Gump boat. Shrimp boat.
Mm-hmm.
Ginny 7 is, I think, what the name of this boat is.
Yeah. There's a contrast here with William and Caleb, I think, where, you know, he's talking like he is not human Caleb. He says your father died a long time ago. That's very much a contrast to William, who says I am William. Is there some fundamental difference between humans who are going all the way down now and hosts who are made in the image of someone simply realizing
they
are them?
I wonder, because I got to say, I kind of roll with the Westworld way of looking that if you have a discontinuity of existence, but it then restarts, it's pretty much the same thing. You know, it's a ship of thesis, right? Only with human biology and consciousness instead of.
Yeah.
But the animal part of me really rages against that. Like, if I was on an operating table and I look over and I see my clone who's going to, it's because I got cancer, I'm riddled with cancer, and he doesn't, and he's going to get my consciousness transferred, and they're going to put me to sleep. I think I'd feel a certain way about that. I wouldn't be like, ah, I'll live on in that other body. I think I'd feel very much like I'm dying. They play around with that with the last season of Invincible too. There's this kid that has a broken body and he transfers his consciousness. And at the last, I accept the truth of it, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just a little bit too spiritual to think that it's all. But
well, old habits are hard to break, Aaron. And I'm not just talking about.
But I do. I feel like from the perspective,
but human nature is hard to break.
From the perspective of Caleb, who died at the mining site. Mm-hmm. He did end, and this is a version of Caleb, but it's not this probably identical or the same as the Caleb who didn't die there. But that's also, you start getting into mini-verse type of stuff there too, multiverse stuff, and I don't know.
Yeah, no,
I wonder what our pal Aaron Rabinowitz would say about all this.
I feel like they're now two entities that are separate entities. They have all the experiences of the pattern they were made from to begin with, but they instantly diverge. I mean,
yeah,
the fact that you're on this table and your clone is on the other table means you have different experiences and you become different people, but there's a continuity there of like memory, I guess.
That's why, like, I think that
sense of self.
You appeal to a soul, or like Altered Carbon had the cortical stack where it's like, that is a unique copy that is a physical thing that goes from body to body. Like, there is a continuity of existence. Yeah.
You could copy those, right?
Was it possible? Or just, I can't remember that universe. So if it was possible, or was it illegal, or is it illegal? Okay. Yeah. I feel like everything is neatly solved if you just believe in a soul. Unfortunately, I chose my allegiance with science, and I can't do that. So.
Yeah, but I miss it. The choice.
I missed the unironic belief that the God had something, had something that he could save, like a fart in a jar.
Sure.
And you could uncrack it and pour it back into a skull, and you're good. You're good.
It's certainly a comforting blanket to curl up under. But
might literally be true. I'm not going to stake a claim on that.
All right, Hale turns the Sublime's cooling system back on and saves the Sublime in the process, and then loads Christina's pearl into it. Here's what I want to know, my most important question of the episode. What do you think is going on in the Sublime when the server temps are redlined? Is it like choppy frame rate? Is everybody like, what the fuck? I'm getting 4 frames a second on my simulated.
Are they loading
world.
A new host again? God
I can't
damn it.
Have
I thought,
orgy like this.
I thought
are
we were done
me?
With this 30,000 years ago. Now my, yeah, yeah. Right.
come on, Akicha. What's going on? Everybody's at Akicha's house just knocking on his door like, come on, man.
Yeah.
What's going on
yeah.
here? You're supposed
hey,
to be the gatekeeper.
I reset the Wi-Fi. What more do you want? You know, wait for it to reboot. I just love the idea that everybody's camped out of Akicha. Like, he's tech support, gatekeeper.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's... what do you make of Hale explicitly calling her Dolores?
I don't fucking know. This goes back to the continuity of thought here. I mean, if she is one of those marbles from like Lawrence or Musashi or whoever, then she kind of is literally Dolores. But if she is some memory of Dolores that is now Christina, I feel like Christina would be Christina.
Yeah, why couldn't she just call Dolores Christina or Christina Dolores? Why the subterfuge of the new name?
Because otherwise, well,
and there's a lot of yeah, like, because there's also know. A clever someone saying that like, okay, if you go back and watch, because you know people rewatch the season, you go back and rewatch, I think it's episode 5 where Hale visits Christina as a roommate, mm-hmm. her old college friend roommate.
Diner or whatever. Yeah.
The scene preceding that has the man in black and Hale talking about the weird shit happening, you know, with these outliers and these corrupted hosts. And she says, well, I'm going to run a full system diagnostic. Mm-hmm. The next scene, she's visiting Christina. I think it's it because I talked about, like, what is the experience of being, like, a task manager in Windows? And it feels like that they're trying to show, like, was that the system check and Christina experienced it as a visit from her college friend? Like,
or
what
did
would...
Hale literally load herself into the computer system and visit her in her world?
What also makes me wonder, like, when you ever saw in season 1 and season 2 where, like, a technician would take a host and be like, okay, personality affect off, go into diagnostic mode. What is the host's perception of that happening? Mm-hmm. You know, do they have any way of making kind of any kind of normal sense of that? I just thought it's, yeah,
I think those old Westworld hosts were programmed not to compartmentalize that stuff, right? To mm-hmm. to not even realize they had gone into diagnostic mode when they returned from it. So, but yeah, when they're in it, I don't know. I assume it doesn't matter. All those records are going to be deleted at some point or offloaded to a mainframe where,
mm-hmm.
yeah. But I don't know. So you say this just to what make us let us know that it's probably not Hale as part of the Christina simulation. Like Hale is not Christina in that scene.
I guess yes, that would also be one of the conclusions that you would.
Because a natural conclusion is to jump to Hale being just part of Christina, right?
Right.
Just
right.
like Teddy, just like Maya, just like everyone in her world.
Right.
But then, you know, why create that adversary for herself? I already think the boss is enough of an adversary
right.
that I don't understand why she did that.
Oh, is this a weird visualization of hers, how she experienced herself diagnostic of her college yeah. roommate checking up on her?
Gotcha. All right, we go over to Christina realizing she's in the Sublime and that Teddy isn't real again. And she decides to find the real Teddy in the Sublime and to give humanity one last test. A dangerous game, she says. A dangerous game. Fuck that line. Using her memory. There is no tower
dangerous
in this
game.
World either.
Going to hunt them in, yeah.
She's eliminated the tower.
Yeah, I don't know, man, because like I think this is the new visualization. But at this point, I feel kind of strongly that they bullshitted us by not having the letterboxes at least last episode. And then, because like, after you know, they could have just been like, well, as Dolores was diluted, as soon as she got undiluted, I think those bars should have kept in. Because like, I just don't think they did enough to distinguish the fact that she was a program versus a host versus, you know, a simulation. Because now she's explicitly plugged into a simulation.
And I mean, hosts are nothing but simulations, right? I mean, there's effectively no difference between a host running on a computer system or a host in a host body or a host in the Sublime.
I understand that, but the show has made it a difference. Like difference between being in Preston Flesh versus being in a frame versus being in a simulation. And I don't know what the difference between Christina being a program versus like, they want me to think that like, oh yeah, program, that's different than a simulation, but
it's not.
I'm with you. I'm just trying to articulate why, I felt like that didn't work. And this is like all this stuff by this point, the show has made abundantly clear all of these points, and it felt very tedious, especially on multiple rewatches of watching her realize that she's been talking to herself, and she recontextualized Teddy sitting there talking to her as her talking to her. It's like, oh my God, this is like the fourth step of the Martin reveal. beating a dead horse, you know? And this is a code written in their cells. They'll never change. I don't know what that means in the context of, you know, our brains are very analogous to computers. Like that's like saying your code's written in your firmware. It can never change. Like, I don't know. Feels weird, but also it's just goes back. That's the thing. It's like, I'm glad we had the philosopher on to talk about it, but also felt like a little bit of a dead end because I don't think the show is consistent, you know, I think, you know, I think Aaron explicitly said that from his perspective, there's no way the host would have any more free will than we do.
Yeah. I think the show's drawing a false dichotomy here between humans and hosts when it comes to free will and the ability to change. I don't think one is more able to change than another. It's just that we don't have the technology to change ourselves yet. We will.
Yeah.
Whether it takes, you know, 100 years or 70 or 30,000 years, we'll eventually get there if we don't kill ourselves. So there's another thing in here that I think is interesting where she says, Teddy says, let the humans go. Don't bring the flaws of their kind into our world. I think this really gives a lot of insight into what Hale's doing at the end of this episode, killing herself. I think she views herself as fundamentally flawed. And if she were to go into the Sublime, she would just destroy that world like she's destroyed this world out here. And I think that's my favorite part of the episode. My favorite ending of this episode is Hale's ending. I think it's the most poetic. I think it's the most poignant. Yeah, that really worked for me. And it's lines like that that helped it along.
What did you think of the Radiohead song? The Pyramid?
I'm not familiar with that song. I didn't identify
Same. It turns out that these songs are a hell of a lot less impactful when you have never heard it before.
Is this something off of like an album after Kid A or something?
I'm not the world's biggest radio. Yeah, same. So like so maybe I'm just an uncultured swine. This is a hugely popular song. And
but I listened to that album they released on the internet for free, like once when they released it, like In Rainbows or something. I forget the name of it. But yeah, I haven't listened to them in a while. Let me ask you this. She lets go of her memory of Teddy to go find the real one, potentially in the Sublime, who has lived 30,000 years without her. Is that long enough to give up your cornerstone? What kind of Teddy is she going to find in there? That's like, them saying, what's your name?
It was so cringe.
Delos, is that your name?
Yeah, you're my cornerstone. I mean, hosts are built different. Like, they have perfect memory that doesn't fade.
Sure. I'm joking, but also 30,000 years is a long damn time of living to still be hung up on some girl.
Fall out of love, like, would you eventually not try, like, you know, there's no evidence that, but that's the other thing, is like, in this fiction, the hosts in the Sublime have run many simulations, and they might you know, like holding out hope for 30,000 years for Teddy is a lot different than a human holding out hope.
Agreed.
For 30, I guess. But I don't know. It's George Jones, you know, he stopped loving her that day when he dies. That's how that's going to end for Teddy, gotcha. Whether it's 30,000 or 300,000 or 3 million. Some people simp that hard, man. They take that simping to the grave.
It ain't easy. But it is necessary.
It's true to make this show work, apparently.
Yep.
Another awkward fade to black, by the way, when she walks out in the city. Another nice one before she starts monologuing about the hosts and humans being given the gift of intelligent life and squandering it.
Yeah, let's go there. It was such a big, obvious fade to black that I have it in my notes. I said, after a fade to black, Dolores walks through the carnage of her city while she laments the failures of intelligent life and the extinction of humanity. Frankie and Caleb part ways. Hale sheds her skin and crushes her own marble. And Dolores prepares one last life or death game in Sweetwater.
You think it's kind of jarring that the hosts refer to themselves as creatures a lot in this episode? I don't think I've ever heard them do that before. Creatures. We're creatures.
I prefer the word being, but...
Yeah, person.
Person would work just fine, yeah.
Yeah. People. I thought it's weird.
Distracting, but I could see why some might.
I mean, creatures, like everyone's a creature, literally, but it just felt weird because I don't think I've ever heard them refer to themselves as that before. Maybe I have. I mean, I'm sure there's other examples if so, but.
Yeah. And you're alluding to the line about their kind will go extinct. Will, 100% will. They will only live as long as the last creature who remembers them, and that creature is me. This is what Dolores is saying about the humans and also the hosts on the outside. Yeah.
Clementine referred to themselves as creatures too. And she says, where is it your real intent to make a world where creatures like us could have the freedom to do whatever they want?
Their kind will go extinct is not necessarily the line I have a problem with. It's sentient life on Earth has ended.
Right.
Really? Where are you then?
Well, that's the thing. Some part of maybe, I think it's very poetic, which is kind of dumb, but she says, well, but some part may be preserved in my world. We're going back to Christina's world, which is the painting reference, which is so like, I think they're literally saying, but she says sentient life on Earth. On I don't Earth. Know.
If I'm an on alien Earth. And I come to Earth and I discover if this she said, computer running sentient simulations life in, of on, beings.
Yeah. Sentient life in
think,
this
boy,
world.
Boy, there was no life on Earth. I'm going to think, oh, there was digital life on Earth.
An entire simulated simulation, like Captain Picard would figure that shit out in the first right, before the first commercial right. break, like
before it took over his ship. Yeah,
right, right. I thought that and she said sentient life in this world has ended because then she said, but in my world, okay, but when you say on Earth, that means something, you know, terra firma. Yeah.
And they're usually so good at the ambiguous language, and here they just straight. Go for it. And it doesn't
it's like
work.
A lot. It didn't really come together because she's like, time for one last game with the highest stakes, survival or extinction, which I think is the third time we've heard this articulated in this episode. And then a world like a maze that tests who we are and reveals who we are to become. This actually ties into a dialogue where Ford in the first season was chiding Lee Sizemore for not being able to write compelling narratives because he said people don't want to find out their deepest desire is not to find out who they are. It's to find out what promise that they have or what they can become. So it's a kind of terrible piece of dialogue that references something I think is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I can get down with that. I don't know. This is yet another instance of like the production team on Westworld is really amazing. They shot this Times Square stuff in the volume apparently.
Not like the volume, like we've seen before in Lopez, literally the volume. They name check. Yep. And if you don't know, this is the technology they use on a lot of Disney Plus stuff where it's essentially a vast warehouse with high resolution projector surfaces on all like the floor, the ceiling, and with the right camera setup and the right focal distance, you can essentially simulate not just it's like a green screen, but you get all of the ambient lighting that would be in the real place for free because these pixels are actually emitting the light that they so like all the atmospheric and ambient lighting effects you get kind of for free. And I thought it was used pretty well. Thought it was pretty. I had assumed they did this all in Manhattan and just green screened the monitors and stuff. But no, the whole fucking Manhattan was just a big box with projector walls.
Yeah, you can see it in the post episode documentary thing that they do, whatever it's called.
That made me appreciate the set design a lot more, because like they had, God, Manhattan would look so much different if they did this with all the billboards, if they actually projected green spaces and, right, you know, beautiful things. And the idea of once the tower is destroyed and the control is lost, that there is like a little bit of that commercial crassness bleeding through, like, you know, corrupting the, yeah, the nat. I thought that was, it, that was super cool.
It doesn't really make like real world sense, but thematically it's very cool. Yeah.
And when she's talking about one last loop around the bend and the player piano starts up a Sweetwater, and the fact that she is kind of the player piano, which we talked about in the feedback episode, you know, people noticed that her little pouch as Christina, that little leather pouch she wore on her belt, has like these player piano carvings, the sheet music that it follows on it, that she's the conductor of this. I thought that was cool too.
Yeah.
They came close. They really came very close to fully connecting this, and it didn't. And now you just got a bunch of disappointed people. It's too bad.
No, and I am like excited for the possibilities of season 5. I think there's a lot of places they could go that would be interesting. I'm also nervous because taking it back to Sweetwater for an entire season seems like a lot. So I hope they have more. I hope they have Sublime stuff. I hope they have something in the real world that maybe explains why or how humans would go extinct, and that hosts would go extinct outside there too. But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I wish we won't.
Maybe we never will. Who knows?
I wish I had the time. I wish this was happening in November, so we were going into our slow season, because I think it would be fun to do a full series rewatch starting at the end of the season, because I think it will loop amazingly back to season one, and taking that knowledge to see how that feels. And I've always heard that the seasons 2 and 3 are better as a binge. It would be neat to kind of like just go through and just watch it all and see how well it hangs together as a recursive loop. And then also see, you know, cause I think if they do season 5, they'll lose that. You know, they're not going to have the elegant recursion, because they'll have to, like, they can't end season 5 with a recursion into Westworld again, right?
Oh, well, the series will be one iteration of, I guess, a recursion that ends. Yeah, so it won't be truly recursive.
Right. So I wonder, I don't know, that's to me, it's like season 5 better really fucking put a exclamation point and underline everything, because it is a cool idea. I do like the recursive nature of the time.
Does that ultimately feel dissatisfying though? Or are we going to like end the series where we began the series and say that nothing will ever change? Like, I don't know. Cause I fundamentally disagree, I guess. Like, I think that's the thesis of the show, that this pattern will repeat forever and no one can ever grow out of it, I fundamentally disagree.
Well, there's always a chance that something will change. It might, you know, be on the 289th iteration. It might be on the 3000th year iteration, but like, there's always a hope that something might change. If there's a loop, you can always get you know, it's like all those, let's go back to Star Trek Next Generation, all those times where the crew got trapped in a time loop. They eventually escaped, right? They eventually came up with enough information, enough stuff that they were able to get out of it. And I think that's the hope of Westworld, I guess.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's like, even if they're trying to put this to rest as at a recursion in case, so they have some kind of ending, it's like, well, the ending is just season one. Mm-hmm. I wish they'd done it better. I wish they'd done it better, because I think they could have with the, and this isn't like a 50% shit episode. It's more of like a lot of really cool stuff that got 90% of the way there and it just couldn't quite connect the dots. Yeah. And it's a real damn shame, because this is the first time I'm ending Westworld thinking that, oh boy, I'm just not confident that there's going to be something beyond this at the end of the rainbow, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the idea of this, of taking it all back to Sweetwater you know, the game ends where, or the game begins where the game ended, or whatever, you know, Ford says about that stuff in season one. Mm-hmm. I think gives me a little bit of confidence that they had an ending planned when they started this thing, that they always knew they were going to do this kind of recursive thing. And so maybe season five will have some larger point to make that they've been, that has been brewing for five seasons. Yeah. Not just, shit, we got a fifth season. I guess we got to write it.
I am a little scared that they don't really have a definitive end, and maybe they did, okay, but like the last couple of years have made them wonder and question if that's still irrelevant, you know, because like the world's changed a lot since season one of Westworld, gone through a pandemic. Their kids are older. Like there's a lot of like, you know, obviously Joy and Nolan being parents, you know, that's always been like a theme. You know, what's it like to been, you know, I know it's been a mixed bag for myself parenting through a pandemic and, you know, like all the chaos and upheaval we see in the day to day life. But if they had a concrete endpoint, is it the same one? Mm-hmm. Because this didn't feel like the confident step into an end game the way I would expect if they had everything planned out.
Gotcha.
But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. That's the end of the episode.
Just a quick note, westworld@baldmove.com, of course, if you want to send feedback, we're going to have at least one more episode, a wrap-up episode. I'm not sure if it'll be in addition to the feedback or if the feedback episode will serve as the wrap-up. We have one planned for next week, but we'll just see.
Said like everything I would want to say.
I know, and I feel like there might be some amazing stuff that comes out. There wasn't a lot of interviews that I saw, especially from Christopher Nolan, Jonathan Nolan
stuff,
which makes me wonder if she's taking point on this project and he's kind of moving on to other things after this season. But maybe there'll be some. I don't know if we'll need more than just a feedback episode to wrap things up. But of course, we are getting into the. If you're a fantasy fan, we're getting into Super Bowl season because there is a really good joke on Westworld. It's like, oh, episode 9 looks a banger. We're going back to medieval world, and it's just a screenshot of House of the Dragon. Uh-huh. But House of the Dragon, the new franchise in the Game of Thrones universe. I've seen the first episode.
Time loops. Those dragons and their time loop powers, man, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah, they've really got us on the flat circle there. I think that if you liked Game of Thrones, and I know a lot of people feel about Game of Thrones the way we feel about this finale, didn't end well. Mm-hmm. If you like the setting, you like the universe, I think it's promises to be a return to form. It would definitely justify me watching the whole season, that first episode. I think. You should give it a try. Week after that, Amazon is deploying their Lord of the Rings.
Hot D. I want to let people know if they want to search it up because it's not going to be on this feed. You got to go search Hot D, House of the Dragon podcast, Bald Move.
Yeah. And you can get you can follow us on the Rings of Power and Dug Too Deep because the Amazon's got their Lord of the Rings property coming out the week after that. They're going to have a double episode drop on the first or they're going to deploy two episodes to kind of catch up to Game of Thrones, I guess. I'm excited about that. Also, if you want to get all of our science fiction, fantasy stuff in one feed, there's Bald Move Pulp. Search for that and you won't ever miss another pulpy science fiction fantasy show. Mm-hmm. So we hope you follow us to those adventures. If not, westworld@baldmove.com for your final thoughts of the season. And we'll just monitor to see maybe... that would justify a wrap-up episode next week if we got confirmation from HBO that there will be a season 5 greenlit. But we'll see. Westworld@baldmove.com. Get your feedback in before Thursday so that we can consider it. And we'll see. We'll see what becomes of the franchise. We're moving on to new things starting this weekend, actually, with House of the Dragon, Hot D, and Rings of Power, R.O.P., ROP. Not as doesn't sound as cool as Hot D. ROP.
Nah.
ROP is from an acronym already taking it to the kidneys by Hot D. Can't beat the Hot D. I choose Hot D to let Hot D make the choice for me.
Oh, boy.
And
I give you the choice to end this podcast. Will you take
it? I'll take it.
What's next?
Until next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.